Hi, I'm Dr. Elizabeth Sanders, a foot and ankle surgeon and assistant professor at Boston University Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Katrina Sanders. I'm a registered dental hygienist, consultant, international speaker, and wine lover.
And we're sisters. I grew up looking up to my big sister, Katrina.
And now I look up to my lady boss, physician sister, Elizabeth.
Together, we are working to unite the dental and medical communities in unique and exciting ways.
Welcome to Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters, our monthly podcast,
where we unpack all things health related from your mouth to your toes.
So grab your flossy flops
and slide on some flippy floppies
and let's get on with the show. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Floss and Flip Flops with your favorite sisters, the Ginger Sisters. Hello, Dr. Sanders. How are you today?
Hi, I'm so good, Katrina. A little tired.
You are?
No.
Oh, I see what you did there.
No, I'm not at all tired because I was really excited about this podcast today.
Oh my gosh. How are you doing? Actually, I feel great because I feel really good. A great night's sleep last night.
Me too. I feel awesome.
So I'm so excited. We are entering the month of May, and May is Sleep Better Month, right? So I always laugh when we talk about sleep. And, you know, as a dental hygienist who speaks to dental professionals on sleep, I always feel like I'm preaching to the choir about sleep because half of us don't get optimal sleep. But we're going to talk today about ourselves acquiring optimal sleep. And then, quite honestly, what we're starting to see in this new wave or this new age of sleep, why we're concerned about it, why we're focused on it, and ultimately what our role as professionals are. You being a medical professional, me being as a dental professional, and ultimately, you know, how we can support our patients in the community in sleep. So I'm so excited because we have a guest with us. This is like so fun. Oh, I love it when you have
so
guests.
This
is great.
Guest. Yeah. I think some of our best podcasts, and then this one's we have gonna guests. Be really, really good one.
Yeah, I'm so excited. So I'm so excited to welcome to the podcast the CEO, the founder of the International Academy of Sleep. So a true expert in sleep, but I promise this will not be a snooze fest. This is Avi Weisvogel. So Avi, hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to Floss and Flip Floss.
Hello. Hello, Sanders Sisters. You know, also my favorite sisters, for sure.
Oh, yay! He's the best.
Yeah, listen, this world will be a much better place with way more of the Sanders sisters here. Oh. I am totally psyched to be here. And I can't wait to talk. Hey, I love talking with both of you anyway. So doing this and then talking about a subject that I am passionate about, which is the world of sleep, I am really excited to do so.
Oh my gosh, me too. And I will say, like, this is such a unique space for dentistry to really be diving into. So before we talk about sleep, tell us about you, your role in dentistry, who you are, and how you got involved in dentistry.
All right. Now I got to go way back.
Okay. We're going to way back.
Way back. Yeah. As you can tell, I am obviously an old man with grandchildren already. So, you know, this is so long ago.
Hardly.
You have to decide what you want to do with your life at some point. At some point, you're deciding, okay, I got to choose a profession. It has been drilled into me since I did that. That was a little pun too, right? Drilled into me since I'm a little guy. From my grandfather, this is someone who I was close with, my mom's dad. And it was always, hey, you got to have to figure out a way to support a family. You got to figure out your way. This is your job. You're going to do it. I think he said, hey, no one ever calls it going to fun. They call it going to work. I'm like, okay, see, this is a serious topic for you. He was a kind of an entrepreneur in a way, and maybe a little bit of ahead of its time for a serial entrepreneur guy. But certainly a motivator for me. And college comes around, right? And I got the same speech, like when I was graduating eighth grade, hey, no more of the games. This is going to count now because your high school grades are going to be what gets you into college. Mm-hmm. And I'm graduating high school. It's like, all right, this is it. No more screwing around now. This is it, right? And then same thing. And then of course, same thing with dental school. And then there you go, straight on through to, okay, what are you going to do for a living? Now you have a choice, right? We took the SATs. I took the SATs. Mm-hmm. With now you can take the ACTs, but for me it was, what was your choice? The SATs, two sections, verbal and math. I did not get into college because of my verbal SATs. I think they probably said, nah, I don't think college is appropriate for you. Yet somehow I did really, really well on the math. Like I got bored with reading the reading comprehension. So I was like, C.
Sure. Yeah. C all the way down the
page. But math, yeah. It just came easily to me. So I knew all the answers and I did really well on math. And so it's like, hey, you should do something with the sciences. Now, as you know, not everybody who's watching this knows, my dad is a cardiologist. And so as a youngster, watching my dad be a physician to, let's call it at least the community and over everybody we were meeting. And I would have the following happen to me all the time. These people who would come up to me and say, hey, your dad, he saved my life. Now, that certainly had an impact on me when you're already looking up at your dad as a superhero anyways. Yeah, I want to save people's lives. That's cool, too. However, I also saw him working really crazy hours, getting called into emergencies all hours of the night. And family to me is everything. So I wanted to have a really important family life. And so it's like, hey, you're pretty good at science. You're looking for a family life where you're not having emergencies at the middle of the night. Maybe you should consider dentistry. All right. So everything was lining up. And instead of taking the MCATs, I took the DATs. Did well there, got into dental school, and I guess the rest became history. I do always love looking at teeth. Teeth to me is like the first thing that I notice on people, and that was before I got into dental school. As you know, when you're in the profession, you notice it about everything.
That's right.
We'll get to talk about here, the first thing I notice about people now is whether or not they have sleep apnea, and then I'll probably notice their teeth.
You know, it is interesting. I love that because yes, a smile, straight white teeth, you know, Stephen Lin says in his book, The Dental Diet, I quote this all the time, that veneer of straight white teeth gives you that perception of health, right? But there are other ways that we also gather that perception of health. When you look at the color of somebody's skin, the bags under their eyes, the sunkenness of their eyes, you know, just the bloodshot eyes, how fatigued they look, that also gives you a lot of perception about patients, right? About how healthy they may be. And so I think that is really where we started to see a transition in dentistry, how critical the oral cavity and our head and neck examinations, some of the things that we're doing, that we started to pave this way for dentistry to start to dip their toe, so to speak, to see the foot doctors like, yep, dip their toe into, you know, talking about sleep and airway. So your dad's a cardiologist. So I would imagine he's seeing a lot of patients that have sleep complications. Is this something that in his practice he began to discover throughout his cardiology career? Was this something he was taught in medical school? Like what are the trends here that then brought you into studying the sleep space?
These are the great questions, right? I mean, you go to medical school, you're supposed to be taught, I guess, the different things that one would need to know to take care of a patient. So I go to my doctor, I want to know one thing. Hey, am I healthy? And if not, what do I need to do to be healthy? Mm-hmm. Right now, sleep is not something that is really touched on much in medical school. I think there might come a time where it does because, hey, let's face it, it's a third of life. We're just kind of skipping a third of life. But I think the stat is kind of crazy. Like if you graduated medical school in the past 10 years, maybe you got a half a day of sleep education, but more than 10 years ago, and my dad graduated way more than 10 years ago, 0 hours of sleep education. So it's like, okay, first going to doctors asking about our health. He's a cardiologist. And if we had asked him, let's go back 20, 25 years. Right. So the sleep of sciences or the science of sleep is relatively new, 90s. Right. So if we go back 25 years and we say to Jerry Weisvogel, the cardiologist, hey, what do you think about sleep apnea? He goes, yeah, I understand that sleep apnea is there. A lot of my patients who have cardiovascular disease might have sleep apnea. And if you ask him today, he'll tell you something completely different. happens to be that a lot of my patients have sleep apnea, which has caused their cardiovascular disease, right? Mm. Not the, hey, cardiovascular patients may have sleep apnea, but yet the sleep apnea may be causing the disease. So this was a journey. It was a journey for my dad. It's a journey for me. I'm sure a journey for both of you too, because you got to go and learn this stuff if you want to learn it. For me, I was lucky. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I told you my dad was always doing emergencies and getting called out all crazy hours. And, you know, the bond between a dad and a son is really important. Mm-hmm. We started going on this level of, all right, let's go down this path together. He's like, I have patients that seem to have sleep apnea. I'm like, hey, every patient I treat as a dentist who has sleep apnea, they all have cardiovascular disease. Let's see what's going on here. My dad took it so seriously because he is a scientific guy. He took it so seriously that he became the first cardiologist to seek out board certification in the world of sleep apnea, right? That he could actually be a sleep doctor, someone who's board certified in sleep, which became a huge thing. Now you can't do it just because you want to. You have to go through a fellowship. It's a whole big thing. Nobody who's a doctor that's working on patients and has an active life supporting their family is going to take 2 years off to go back and do sleep. It's kind of, you'll do it at the beginning because that's what makes sense for you. When he took his sleep boards, I'm going to try to remember around when it was, maybe 15 to 20-ish years ago or so. I was learning all about sleep apnea. He was learning about sleep apnea. He wanted to go to the point where he said, hey, if this is really affecting my patients, I better be the expert at this. Where if a patient's going to come in and they're going to talk about their, you know, cardiovascular issues, if they're being caused by sleep and I don't treat the sleep apnea, we're probably never going to treat this. It's like, hey, let's keep putting a band-aid on the issue. We'll get into some crazy stories as we go along here about patients that I've seen over the years specifically that have had the combination of cardiovascular disease and sleep, where when you treat the sleep apnea, all of a sudden the cardiovascular issues tend to go away. So pretty crazy stuff.
That's amazing. Wow. So Dr. Sanders, question for you, how many hours of sleep training did you receive in medical school?
Yeah, absolutely zero. And I was just thinking to myself, you know, a lot of the reasons that people may have problems sleeping are probably what we talked about, sleep apnea or GERD or a restless leg. But I rarely do I have patients coming to me saying, you know what, I have restless leg or I have problems sleeping. Mm-hmm. So I actually kind of wanted to ask you, Avi, a lot of the times people will probably, maybe they'll come to you saying, oh, I do have problems sleeping, or a patient will come to a doctor saying, yes, I definitely have problems sleeping. But I'm sure there are a lot of people who don't know that they have problems sleeping. And you had mentioned that you can see on people that they probably have sleep apnea. What are some things that a provider would see that may suggest, okay, I think that you would be a good candidate. In fact, I probably think that all patients would be good candidates for sleep therapy and to be, you know, instructed in some manner. But what are some things that patients present with or don't present with?
This is an awesome question, by the way. It is the problem. It's like, hey, are there things that we should be looking at? And they're probably not what we're thinking here. So let's say me as a dentist, if I was to walk into a physician's office and ask them if they screen their patients for sleep apnea, to me, whether they say yes or not, they don't screen their patients for sleep apnea. So would you consider this screening? I have a health history, and on that health history, I have two questions. Do you snore? Do you have sleep apnea? That's not really screening. That's just a big health questionnaire that you're asking a million
questions.
And
how do I know I have sleep apnea? I don't know.
Exactly. Right. Unless somebody tells you, you don't know. So now they'd say, yes, I screen. I'm like, I'm not sure you do. It's like, hey, do you hand out an actual screener? The doctors would say to me, no, I don't need a screener because I know who has sleep apnea and who doesn't. You know, if a patient has sleep apnea, I refer them out to a sleep doctor. I'm like, but how do you know who has sleep apnea or not if you're not handing out a screener? And the very line of, I know who has it, you could be right that the patients you do send to the sleep doctor are the obvious ones, right? The heavy ones that are falling asleep in the waiting room. Those patients all have sleep apnea. But what about the ones who are like prime athletes with like no body fat? And yet those guys tend to have sleep apnea too. So when a doctor says it to me, I know who has sleep apnea, I'm like, you know, it's kind of funny. I am in this field and I see patients frequently, and unless I have a screener. I have no clue if someone has sleep apnea or not. So let's go over the health history and let's find some markers that'll say this patient has sleep apnea, right? A patient with AFib almost definitely has sleep apnea. Cardiovascular disease, definitely have to get this patient tested, see where we're at. Right, diabetes. And since we're on a podcast here, we're going to be talking to people in the dental profession, right? Let's start thinking about things that nobody else is looking for, right? Narrow palates, obviously some class two patients. We would see plenty of those patients in need of at least sleep testing to see what they have. Take it even further, tori, cervical abfractions, all of these things that we see, and I'm sure you see these, Katrina, all the time. It's like, yeah, this patient is someone who needs to be tested. So not only are these markers that doctors can see just by looking at health histories and understanding a little bit about it, but people in a dental profession, they're like in prime position to see who's got it, who doesn't, who should be tested, and how can we get this patient treated?
Oh, I love that. In fact, if you don't mind, I'm going to just do a little shameless plug here. So I work alongside Avi developing on the hygiene side, how dental hygienists can truly be the preventive specialists that we should be in screening for some of these pieces. So if it's okay, Avi, I'm going to give a little spoiler here on the modules that I've released. I generated a list and inside of that included the complexities of the different medical conditions that have some sort of a bidirectional or unidirectional link to sleep or airway complications. So I'm just going to list them off real fast. AIDS, HIV, Alzheimer's disease, anemia, angina, arthritis or gout, artificial heart valve, asthma, blood diseases, cancer, chemotherapy, congenital heart disorders, convulsions, cortisone medication, diabetes, drug addiction, emphysema, epilepsy or seizures, fainting spells and dizziness, glaucoma, hay fever, heart attack or heart failure, heart pain, pacemaker, heart trouble, heart disease, hemophilia, hepatitis B or C, herpes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, hives or rash, hypoglycemia, irregular heartbeat, kidney problems, leukemia, liver disease, lung disease, mitral valve prolapse, osteoporosis, parathyroid disease, psychiatric care, radiation treatments, rheumatic fever, rheumatism, scarlet fever, shingles, sickle cell disease, spina bifida, stomach and intestinal diseases, stroke, thyroid disease, and tonsillitis.
Well, I'm just going to tell you right off the bat that 99% of my patients.
Right. Check at least one of those things, right? So this is the issue. So when I started to pull this research, and I will say inside of the academy that you and I, Avi, do together, inside of our academy, we have like, we dissect down, like, how does, you know, chemotherapy play a role in some of these complications, et cetera. So we really distill this down. But the idea being, number one, just by looking at the medical history, these are risk factors. The current statistic right now is that anywhere between 80 to 90% of sleep apnea cases are currently undiagnosed. So that becomes the issue, because one of the things that you said, Avi, that just continues to ring in my ears over and over and over again is this concept of we've been so accustomed to putting a Band-Aid on things. So what are we waiting for? Are we waiting for that patient to have a cardiovascular event? Like, is that what I'm waiting for? Am I waiting for this patient? Right. Right. Like, is what I'm waiting for them to have that issue, when we've seen the data that if you can put patients who do have sleep complications into some sort of a device to help improve the quality of their sleep, the longevity of their sleep, their ability to go through the entire sleep cycle or reduce sleep fragmentation, which we'll talk about in a second. But when, if you can address some of those pieces early on, then you can reduce your patient's risk of cardiovascular disease, stroke, diabetes, or, you know, rheumatic issues, et cetera. And how many times do patients sit in our chairs and share that either they have risk factors, they'll have high blood pressure, they'll have high cholesterol. And it's like, oh, okay. So those are things that are already adding to the inflammatory fire. What about family history of cardiovascular disease? So now we sit here on this precipice of, quite frankly, knowing too much to ignore these. And I think this is where we have the opportunity to educate our patients. The other part of this question that Elizabeth asked, which I think is a tough one, and you alluded to it, Avi, is there are sometimes patients that'll come in and say, I'm a poor sleeper. I'll call it out, HIPAA. Our brother is a poor sleeper. I think he inherited that from mom, because mom was always a poor sleeper, but he's not a good sleeper. So he would absolutely sit down in a dental operatory. And if you asked him, he'd he'd say like, yeah, I'm not a good sleeper. I'm a very light sleeper. I don't get a lot of sleep. I have insomnia issues. But what about those patients that don't outright say, I have sleep issues, right? And so one of the things that we do find with chronic disease is that by the time the patient complains about it, it's probably pretty bad. But if the patient isn't complaining about it, there are still ways that we can elicit and get some of that, those pieces of information. So it's things like when we ask patients, how long do you sleep for? Some patients take that to mean how many hours are you lying in bed? Not how many hours are you actually getting quality sleep, right? Or looking at, they don't even know. They don't know. Now, with the use of like Fitbits and like Apple Watches and things like that, I think people are getting more information about their own sleep patterns, things they need to be concerned about. But there are even things like sleep fragmentation where, you know, these are, I think we also need to be asking questions like, do you wake up multiple times throughout the night? You know, patients that wake up multiple times throughout the night to go use the restroom, patients that are on diuretics will blame their diuretics, right? Yeah, sure. I get up to use the restroom all the time, but that's because I'm on a water pill. Well, actually, maybe it's because your parathyroid is off. Because if you're waking up to urinate,
another level with them, right? It's say, hey, do you really want to go down that road here of this? It's like, all right, let's take the following. If I could tell you, you're not, and I used to tell this to patients all the time, hey, if I could tell you, you're not going to go to the bathroom four times in the middle of the night, would that be of interest to you? Because we have to get patients not only educated, but motivated here. They got to understand what's at risk here. Now, this is right. A stat that I know that you have heard me say, but we got to say it for the crowd anyways. Yes, you're right. 90% of the patients are not diagnosed, which is crazy. That being said, the ones who are diagnosed and under some form of treatment, because diagnosed and untreated is another issue as well. Diagnosed and untreated or just not diagnosed. The ones who are diagnosed and treated live on average 8 years longer. I mean, that's a staggering amount of time. Forget about the quality of their life beforehand, because we talk about the bags and the exhaustion and everything that can cause problems in your life. Someone who we say looks unhealthy that just isn't sleeping. But it's like, man, imagine the following happens. You go into a store and on the shelf, it's something that says 1 year of life. Right? You can buy this 1 year of life. Like, what are you willing to pay for it? It's like, hey, I drop everything I got on that. Can I want to cash that in at any time? Now imagine it's 8 years, like 8 years of life you can do just by what? Getting tested for sleep and, you know, wearing a device, even if it's a CPAP, doing something is certainly better than doing nothing. I have tested myself for sleep apnea many, many times, never once tested positive. And yet I wear an oral appliance every single night. Now, I do it for a couple of reasons, by the way. Number one, I do feel better. So on the road, I wear my device anyways, even though my wife doesn't really travel with me that much. At home, I am totally protecting my ribs by wearing that appliance, because otherwise I'm getting woken up, elbowed. Hey, you're snoring. But I also know where it's going. Like, we could put these into dental context, right? What happens if you have a patient who's got small caries? Do you wait until this is a tooth that is needs an endo to treat it, right? It's a progression. It's like, hey, it's going to start off here and it's going to get worse. And then maybe it's going to go into the interproximals. And if we miss it, then it's probably going to start encroaching on the nerve and it's going to hurt. And that's when a patient's going to come in and say, help me out here. Sleep is the same thing. You don't go to sleep one night with no sleep apnea and wake up the next day with severe sleep apnea. It's That's a progression. Right. It's going to start. So I know for me, yeah, I'm definitely snoring now more than I used to, right? And I wear the appliance and I do not snore. So my wife is extremely happy with it. But I also know that I'm preventing this from getting worse. It's like, hey, I'm not going to get sleep apnea because I'm treating it before it became a problem even. And if everyone did this, boy, we could wipe this whole thing out almost overnight. Be pretty cool.
You know, how amazing.
I have a question about kind of your ratio of like adult patients to pediatric patients. I could imagine that it may be difficult to have pediatric patients kind of coming on into the practice, because you would just think to yourself, oh, you know, it's okay. My kid's just hyperactive and doesn't sleep very well.
Hyperactive, bedwetting, you know, ADHD, poorly, performing on their report cards, right? Like, I mean, and we assume those behavioral things are just, that's just how my kid is. Yeah.
How are you incorporating these pediatric patients?
You know, I got to be honest about this one. It's a bit of a problem out there, because let's just say we know that there's pediatric issues, and we know that there's certainly, it's an easier thing, actually, believe it or not, to treat from the dental aspect than on the medical side.
Yes.
My best client ever, right? I work with a lot of physicians and I do home sleep testing programs in their office. And my best client ever was a cardiologist in the Orlando, Florida area. His wife was a pediatrician. He wanted a program for her because she wanted it. So she actually saw the difference we were making in her patient, her husband's patients. She's like, well, I have patients too. How are we going to do this? I had to fly in a doctor from Buffalo because I could not find a sleep doctor in the entire state of Florida that wanted to treat kids. So now we have a problem where the doctors themselves, they just weren't willing to do it. I'm like, no, what are we doing here? These poor kids, we could probably catch them pretty early. Doctors don't want to be bothered. It's an issue out there. And listen, you said it yourself. You get 0 hours of education. You have to decide on your own that you're going to do something about it. And doctors, listen, the field of medicine has changed, right? It's like, hey, when my dad grew up, his choices from his very Jewish mom was a doctor or a doctor. You decide which one you want.
Yep. Right?
You're going to be a doctor. That's where you're going to be, because this was the big profession. You know, my son, the doctor. So my dad became a doctor, even though probably his true love in the world is playing piano, and he's amazing and loves classical music. He became a doctor. Now, there was a time where doctor also meant, hey, I'm also probably going to be making some significant money here. Like the top kids in my class were starting to shift away from medicine. I graduated college in 94, but it was, when I graduated, it was harder to get into medical school than dental school. It's not really the case anymore. People see the handwriting on the wall. Personally, I want the smartest people in our country to be doctors. That's great. It's like, let's let all the top people in the country go there. That would make some sense to me, as opposed to, hey, if you're going to get into this field, do it because you love it. Because the money part of it, well, that's a little bit dicey now. Insurances have come in. You know, we do see this happening in dentistry a bit now too. And that's a whole nother story, but it's their medicine. And so doctors then have to go out of their way to learn sleep apnea. And if they don't, they're busy doctoring. It's like, hey, I'm already too busy.
Doctoring.
I have so many stories like this. It'll blow your mind. It's like, listen, I know we all love wine on this call. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right, hey, we could sit down with a couple of bottles of really awesome, good cab, which is my fave.
That is your favorite.
And then we're just going to sit there and tell all of these crazy stories about doctors who just are not willing to do anything.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
to the point where if I say to a doctor, hey, do you test your patients for sleep apnea? Like, too busy. I'm treating this disease and that disease. I can't do anymore. I'm like, hey, this one could be causing all of them. But hey,
yeah, that's,
we'll
right.
keep fighting the fight. Wow,
yeah. That's right. This is what blows my mind about the entire concept around sleep. And we actually have not mentioned it yet, but it's important to me that we mention it during this podcast recording. And that is, when we talk about sleep issues, we talk about treating a sleep issue, what we're actually talking about is empowering our patient to begin breathing correctly. That's the important piece. Right? So what we're saying, when somebody is not getting optimal sleep, when somebody is snoring and, you know, Rebecca's elbowing you in the ribs, right? When that's happening, to be very clear, and I'll say this in a different way, just to help us kind of understand this, 80 to 90% of our population who are choking on themselves while they sleep and are not getting appropriate concentrations of oxygen to their vital organs are currently undiagnosed. And yet the body is telling us, this is what's so fascinating. We spend all this time in medical school and dental school and dental hygiene school studying the ways that the body says there's a problem here, because the body does it. You know, it'll say things when, as a dental hygienist, if the gums are bleeding, when I touch it, like something is wrong here. Hello. Like, it's super easy for us. And yet when it comes to sleep, one of the issues that I think we struggle with in the States is that we have sensationalized this concept of not getting enough sleep. Like, we love to wear that as like a badge of honor, you know, like, oh, I need my Starbucks because I haven't gotten I don't ever sleep. I like never sleep. I have like a zillion things going on in my day. You know, we love to use that as like some sort of a, like, you know, code of, you know, being the best Boy Scout in the league or whatever. And it's, that's just, quite frankly, not true. If if you're not getting ample amounts of sleep, think about what that does over a lifetime of your organs not getting optimal amounts of oxygen. You start to see calcium buildup around the heart muscle. You begin to see the kidneys begin to fatigue. You see fogginess, the brain, and literally how the brain stores memories. Like all the stuff now that I'm studying, what happens when you sleep, like your cells literally repair themselves. If you are not sleeping appropriately, your cells are not repairing themselves. How many times, Elizabeth, you and I lecture all the time on oral systemic link and, you know, how important it is for us to look at that. And you've got a beautiful slide on all of the things that delay wound healing, right? Like, oh, if there's infection or, you know, trauma to the area, or if the patient has an autoimmune disorder, they're, you know, diabetic, whatever, that all these things can delay wound healing. Well, can't poor sleep also delay wound healing? You know what I'm saying?
Makes so much sense.
Right. Yeah. So you look at it and it's like, so what is our care plan? Our care plan is, as Avi said, currently the current statistics of how we manage things. If you have high blood pressure, what is the first care plan thing we do? We prescribe you a pill instead of, well, maybe this hypertension is caused by something else. Patients love to throw that in our faces in dentistry. I'm stressed out. I'm just, you know, I always get white coat syndrome, and it's like, oh, actually your body's telling me something is not correct here. Something's not right. And so for us to be able to move outside of that model that we were taught, you were taught in medical school, if they have high blood, if this, then that, if they have a diabetic toe issue, cut it off. Like that's what you're taught to do. So what we're doing is we are delivering sick care. We are not delivering health care to our patients.
Preventative medicine, right? Is just not where it should be.
That's right. No. So Avi, I would love to share with us some of the stories of some of these complications where patients were coming in, you know, being seen and, you know, receiving, for lack of a better term, you know, receiving that Band-Aid care, and through the use of a sleep appliance and improving their sleep, that they were able to control their conditions in a more succinct way.
So you know, I got a million of these stories.
I know you do.
You could be here all night, but listen, we'll go over a couple of good ones. And, you know, let me just say this first off, as we're doing this, I love hearing you talk about this. It is always amazing to see how passionate you are on the subject, and you do it because you care. I mean, that's something that anybody who knows you knows. Katrina is someone who really cares about her patients and patients you don't even know. Like if there's somebody out there that wants to make a difference, we know it's you. And so thank you for continuing to inspire me and many others. As we go through this whole world, it is crazy. Think about what has to happen for a patient to end up at a dentist. Some doctor had to actually tell the patient, you might have sleep apnea, or the patient complained, probably more likely, right? Patient complains, I'm not sleeping. Oh, I'll send you the sleep doctor. Right. And then they had to get tested, which doesn't happen that often. And they had to go back for the results of their test. And then they probably tried and failed the CPAP, because that's 98% of the patients get CPAP. Mm-hmm. And then they still have to care enough to make their way over to a dentist. So it's like, man, so many things had to line up. And yet plenty of patients end up at the dentist, right? The sleep doctors at this point will typically send their CPAP failures to a dentist, and some that really start to understand it will send their mild to moderates. You know, when we work in IOS, it becomes our model. It's like, hey, we're going to treat all the mild to moderate patients first because of the way we do things. It's just a little bit different. But then we start looking at the patients that did make it in. I mean, my very first patient, I'll never forget it. She came in, honestly, not that different looking than you, right? Taller, athletic, not overweight, even by a pound. It's like, man, this is someone who's out there staying active. And yet when she walked in, we talk about signs, the bags under her eyes were huge. And it's like, oh man, this poor woman. She said, you know, when I said, how can I help you? Realize this was patient number one. She's like, look, I go to sleep. I wake up, I feel worse. So I'm going to sleep exhausted, and I wake up and I actually feel worse. And she's like, anything you can do? Because I've actually been waiting for you to graduate. This is so long ago, 1999. Wow. I've been waiting for you here because nobody else is doing this. My doctor said, he's almost there. Just give him a little bit more time. So if I opened my practice on July 1st, I saw this patient like July 5th or 6th.
Wow.
Walks into the door, young, attractive, athletic. And she's like, look, I don't get sleep. What can you do to help? And realize my entire experience at this time was 1 weekend lecture. That was it. Mm-hmm. 1 weekend lecture. Luckily, I went to that lecture, learned it, took notes, went back to review them, and just essentially said, hey, here's what I can make for you. Take an impression of your teeth. I'm going to make you a device. Now, devices back then were not devices today. The devices today, if I made you one, I probably wouldn't even need to be there. I could just give it to you. It'd slide right in, right? There was a lot of work to do back then to get an appliance to fit perfectly. But I gave her this appliance when she came back in. And I said, here, wear it like this. I followed the instructions to a T, right? Dentists are great at following instructions.
Mm-hmm.
Wear this, come back in 2 weeks, and let's see how you do. She walks in 2 weeks later, comes in, greets me with this huge hug, and is like, look, they're gone, right? Meaning her bags were gone. She's like, I don't know what this thing does, but man, this just changed my life. And here I am, a 25-year-old dentist at the time. And you know what was going through my mind? Hey, I also don't really know what this thing did, but that's pretty cool. I want to know.
Because it's like penicillin.
If I can make this type of change, I definitely want to know. And I always wanted to do something a little different rather than typical drill and fill. This became my passion in life. The problem was she was one patient who was just waiting for me. So mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, here comes the onslaught of patients. They just didn't come because doctors themselves were not seeing patients. If a doctor isn't screening them to send them to a sleep doctor, well, the sleep doctor is not going to have many patients to send to you either. And it's just a cycle that happens. So like the biggest thing that you can do as a provider out there, make sure your patients have some form of sleep screener, anything.
Mm-hmm.
Getting patients tested is a huge service you're doing for them. It's like, we're not only adding years to your life, we're adding quality to your life. The amount of even spouses just being brought back into the same bed is just a great feeling. It's like, hey, that's what I want. I want more of the people coming up to my kids and saying, hey, your dad saved my life. That kind of feeling, you know, to bring it full circle. I guess we found a way to make it there.
I love it. I love it. So when you're talking about screeners, I mean, there is a myriad of ways to be able to screen for sleep, you know, depending on how involved you in, you know, medical or dentistry are involved in that. I would say one of the more common risk assessment screening tools is stop bang. So, you know, do you snore? Are you frequently tired? Do you have an airway obstruction? Do you have blood pressure? Is your BMI that, you know, to indicate that you might have a sleep issue? What is your age? Older age certainly can elevate things. What is your neck circumference? And then what is your gender? Men tend to be a bit more high risk. So stop bang, snore, tired, obstruction, pressure, BMI, age, your neck circumference, and gender. That is one just very quick risk assessment screening tool. And of course, we know inside of that, you don't need to check all the boxes to be somebody who could potentially be a sleep or airway candidate. But that's just one of the more basic of... Right.
Find one. Start there. If we're doing this as a little progressive thing, now we got some stuff going on here. And you know, listen, I know you're looking at your patients. I know both of you are. It's like, all right, mm-hmm. Hey, we're making a little bit of a difference here. You know, the way this thing gets nipped in the bud, it's just everybody starts doing their little part. Mm-hmm. It would be crazy. Imagine the mass chaos. If all of a sudden every doctor tomorrow just started screening and testing their patients, there wouldn't even be providers to treat all the patients. It would be chaos galore. So it's like, hey, you don't have to worry about this aspect of it. There is a bit to the learning curve of how you're going or how you're supposed to follow the process to make sure that, hey, we are a business. We obviously want to help patients, but we also want to get paid for our time. So there is a little bit of an art to learning that part of it. It's not hard. You just weren't taught it. And so like, once you learn it and hear it, you start to perfect this whole process behind the scenes. That part kind of goes away where now, all right, you can do this and get paid. There is not a better service you could do as a dentist. And by the way, there is not a more profitable service you can do as a dentist either. So it's like, if you get into this field because you're someone whose business is just money driven, and I got no issue with it. Business is business, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get this cool byproduct. You're going to save like literally hundreds or thousands of lives, and you're going to add all these years of life to the world. And if you're someone who gets into this because you really want to make a lot of money, well, guess what? You're also going to help a ton of people. So you can't go wrong by getting into this field.
I think about my profession and I see a lot of patients mainly for routine diabetic foot care. And during this exam, I'm cutting their toenails, but I'm also talking to them about their health. And I could see my profession, as well as especially the dentistry profession and dental hygienists, where, you know, there are opportunities where you're just sitting there talking to the patient. And I do think that that, you know, you could ask simple questions like the ones that you just talked about, Katrina. And I could see multiple professions doing the same thing. You know, the time that you're just kind of talking about their health, and patients want that. They want to talk about their health. And how easy would it be to say, you know, I really think you may be having a problem with sleep, and referring a patient. And I could see multiple professions doing that.
I love that you say that, because unfortunately, and I'm just going to like put dental hygienists on blast for a hot second. We love the beauty shop talk. Like we love like, oh, how was your trip to Costa Rica, and how are the kids, and how was cheerleading camp, and did you get a new car, and how's your husband or your, you know, your affair or whatever, you know what I mean? Like
how's your boyfriend?
How's your husband and your boyfriend, you know? So, and we joke all the time in particularly the dental hygiene space that we're not like therapists, but we like are therapists.
Well, it's true.
Hear all this stuff, right? They totally do. Yeah. And we do that because we want to create this amazing patient experience, but inside of that, it actually is more important for us to ask things like, how do you feel when you wake up in the morning? Because you should feel refreshed. You should not wake up in the morning with a headache. You shouldn't wake up in the morning confused. You shouldn't wake up in the morning groggy. You should wake up feeling refreshed. How do you feel throughout your day? Do you feel like the sleep you're getting is allowing you to get through your day? How much caffeine do you consume throughout your day? Or rather, how much caffeine is required of you in order to get through your day? Your body is a machine, and you are not fueling that machine if it is not able to get ample amounts of sleep. I mean, even weird things like, do you experience a lot of dark urine? I mean, just restless leg, you know, all of these little things that when patients start to share those things, they help you to not only learn about the essence of the patient, but to be, you know, true frontline workers in identifying and screening those things. It is truly the difference between following the steps of what you need to do based on what we were taught in medical school, dental hygiene school. Like if this, then that, it changes that from an implementation intervention to a strategy where now you are learning about all of it.
Have you ever actually asked a patient about the color of their urine? I'm not sure I have. I'm like, kudos to you, because hey, you can get away with it. It's like, it's a whole different world. You realize that what you just said, there's so much to it. It's, you know why you probably could ask that question? Because you're doing all the other stuff.
That's right.
You are doing beauty shop talk. And that's why hygiene is like the perfect spot to start talking to the patients about this. It's like, you got a relationship that is unlike anything else. You're their buddy. They're coming there to see you. And as you know, if you left your office tomorrow and went somewhere else, at least half your patients would follow you. That's a massive thing. And now it's more than just, hey, it's not just the beauty shop talk. This is someone who cares. They went the extra mile for me. And man, as hygienists, you are right at the front line there. It's like, we're getting patients right at the beginning. This is the perfect place to get involved. Now it is, you know, the dental population, it's similar to going to any practitioner's office or general practitioner. It's going to be 4 to 10% of the population. But think about it. If you're seeing 2,000 hygiene patients, you could affect 200 of those.
Yeah.
That's significant. And then we start doing it with every dental office. And if there's multiple hygienists in the office, it's like, we got to start it somewhere. And until people start taking it seriously, it's just, we're doing our little drips and drabs.
You know, you're spot on. And I want to, as we kind of wrap up this conversation, I want to share with our audience why this conversation means so much to me and why it means so much to Elizabeth. And Avi, you know this because there was one Zoom call you and I had when I just like lost my mind. And greatest, I remember I was like so angry and I was like, what?
I got off there like ready to go.
Why are people not, you know? And you're like, okay, calm down. Like, it's okay. Like, we're going to get there. And it's truly an honor to work alongside you because you get it. You're in alignment. And so I feel like I'm in this space working with you where it's like, I'm empowered to be able to have these types of conversations. So thank you for being a person where we can create this space. But I do want to share about why this is so important. as everybody listening, anybody who knows me knows Elizabeth, you know that in 2018, we lost our mom to a very sudden episode. We did not know or understand at the time what was going on. We just knew that we lost her. And we began to learn through diagnostic tests that her cause of death was due to an airway obstructive issue, that she had scar tissue built up in her airway that occluded her airway and suffocated her. And, you know, at first you're angry. You know, I do share the story. She went to an ear, nose, and throat specialist that morning who did nothing for her to actually address the issue. She did the Band-Aid thing. She gave a Z-Pack and said, come back in 2 weeks. Spoiler alert, the 2 week re-eval was scheduled on the morning of our mother's funeral. And so inside of that, as we started to help dad, you know, pack up some of the things in the house so that he didn't have to, you know, move all of her pill bottles out of the way or whatever in his mourning process, I noticed that mom had GERD. I noticed that mom had high blood pressure. I noticed that mom was diabetic. I noticed that on mom's side of the bed, there were a stack of pillows. And it was then that it was like the light bulb went off. And it's like, I remember being in college and coming home at like 2 a.m. with my friends from college and mom being awake. And we always thought it was so great. Remember, Elizabeth, like mom would be up and she'd like, we'd all be like drunk from the bars. And she'd be like, remember she'd make eggs for us? You guys want some eggs? That was like her thing. It was like 2 a.m. Everyone's like, let's go to Katrina's house. Cause you know, Mrs. Sanders is going to make some eggs. So, but she was always up. She was always up. She never slept. She just couldn't sleep. She had GERD. She had high blood pressure. She slept with multiple pillows. She was diabetic. Like, hello. Why did nobody do anything about this? And mom saw a dental hygienist every 3 months in Northern Wisconsin. I never had the pleasure of treating my mom, but you know, my mom saw a hygienist and nobody ever talked to her about it. My mom got the Band-Aid. Mom got the pills for her GERD. Mom got the pills for her blood pressure. Mom got the pills to control her diabetes. Mom, you know, had the stack of pillows to try and open up her airway. Mom couldn't sleep. Like at what point do we say like something needs to be done? And at 62 years old, we lost her because of an airway issue. So I guess the important piece for me inside of why it's important for us to think about sleep is yes, our health, our vitality, our quality of life. But as Avi, as you said, it is about longevity. It's about doing the right thing. And I will say it means a lot to me that you and I can work together and have these conversations. Thank you for everything that you and the International Academy of Sleep are doing to pave a way to normalize the conversation around medical and dental professionals having this dialogue, because we lost mom, but there are so many other people out there who do not need to lose their mom. And, you know, I'll be the first to say mom was always one of those. I'll quiz Elizabeth on this. If we fell and skinned our knee on the ground and we'd run inside and we'd say, mom, I fell on the ground and I hurt myself, what would she say to us?
Did you tell the ground you were sorry?
Did you tell the ground you were sorry? That she always taught us, you get back up, you do the thing, you make it better. That's what she taught us. And so if for no other reason, this conversation is truly about mom's legacy and making sure that we help other families not experience what it is that we did. You medical and dental providers listening to this podcast can be a critical part of that for somebody's life and for somebody's family. So thank you.
First off, your story, which I've obviously heard before, always touches my heart. And I never say this to you. And I always think, I'm like, man, I wish I got to meet your mom. I really did.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, we're talking about two amazing women that she's created over here, two incredible people that, listen, I could hang out with and talk to and, you know, go to I'll fight this battle with at any time. So it's like, I wish I got to meet her, but I'll say this to everybody who's listening here. Hey, this story, it has to inspire you to do something. And don't just go take a course. It's not enough. Mm-hmm. You have to do more. Because if you know, and then you're not doing anything about it, how are you different than anybody else out there? Yeah, it could be all fun and games until it happens to someone in your world. And it will. You know, these stories, I tell this to every client that I've worked with in the years at IAOS. It's like, just, you have a story that you know, one personal story, share it, right? Yes. Share that story. All you have to do is lose one patient that you shouldn't have, and it'll stick with you. And, you know, if you're listening to this and you're following this podcast, which I assuming you are because you're listening, and I'm sure you didn't come on for me. So if you're listening, it's like, hey, you owe it to everybody that you see. Go out there, make a difference, take it to a different level. It's not that hard to become the expert in the world of sleep in your area, because most people aren't doing it. Go That's out, right. Learn it, implement it, get your patients tested, stay on them, because you will save their life.
Oh, I love that.
That's amazing. Oh, well, thank you so much, Avi Weisvogel, for your incredible support, for everything that you and your amazing team at the International Academy of Sleep are doing to help improve lives. And thank you, our listeners, for tuning in to another episode of Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters. Join us next time as we brush up on more oral systemic content.
We promise to keep you on your toes.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us for another monthly episode of Floss and Flip Flops with the Sanders Sisters.
Thank you for being part of the change we need to see in the medical and dental professions.
Join us next month for another sister-to-sister chat about other unique, interesting, and perhaps provocative and disruptive health topics.
Don't forget to like and subscribe, and maybe even leave a fabulous review.
And we'll catch you next month for another episode of
Floss and Flip Flops
with the Sanders Sisters.
I love you, Kinka.
I love you, Izzy.